athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Wherever and however you may be listening to the program, thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. Whether you're listening to us on one of our outstanding affiliates around the country or on Sirius XM channels 142 and 84. Look, got a lot to get to on today's program. Some National Football League talk today here on Box to Row. Joining us today here on the program, as a matter of fact, I had a chance to catch up with James Colsey, the head football coach at Florida A&M in his first season. The Rattlers are 3-2 on the season, ranked number one in the coaches poll. And the one thing, I look at Florida A&M playing some pretty good football right now, a big win against Alabama State on last week. That was a really, really big win. I thought that it was an Alabama State team that really doesn't it's a Hornets team that is in need of a quarterback. I think if the quarterback situation is ironed out, obviously Andrew Boddy's going to be out for the season, this would be a different Alabama State team. That said, look, Florida A&M, give Florida A&M all the credit in the world. Came back against South Carolina State, opened the season, held on to defeat Norfolk State, and in between those first two games and this win over Alabama State, a couple of things have happened with Florida A&M. Number one, you had two FBS opponents sandwiched in between those games. One of those, a Power 5 in Miami. And then the next turned around the next week and also had to play Troy. But you're also talking about a Florida A&M team that is on a bye week. A couple of weeks ago, had an unexpected bye because of the hurricane, and ended up having to have that game against Alabama A&M moved all the way back to the end of the season. And by the way, that's going to be a game that it ordinarily wouldn't have played. So, and then also a bye early on in the season, but it's also a Rattlers team that was played opening weekend and got that, you know, that victory to open the weekend. So it's been an interesting year, I would say, for Florida A&M. But I think James Colsey has done a good job to this point, a 3-2 Alabama or Florida A&M team getting ready to face a tough Jackson State team who Jackson State rebounded from that loss a couple of weeks ago against Grambling and is one of the leaders in the SWAC. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. As a matter of fact, it's a replay of a conversation that we had with James Colsey earlier, really a couple of days ago here on the program. We're going to take a look at some of the games from week seven. We've got the SWAC doesn't really have an intriguing matchup this week. The MEAC is not in MEAC play. There are some good games in the CIAA. Shaw, Winston-Salem State, one of those football games. I mean, the pretty much, I would say, the winner of this game not only still controls its own destiny, but also is going to be in that top two, top three conversation when you're talking about the CIAA. Really, it's Johnson C. Smith. But again, Shaw still has to play Johnson C. Smith, only one loss. Winston-Salem State still has to play Johnson C. Smith, only one loss. The winner's still in it. The loser, I think, is pretty much out because you've still got a Virginia Union team that is undefeated in conference play. And so that's going to be an interesting football game from a CIAA perspective. Then I look in the SIAC, and obviously that Miles and Albany State game is the game. The game is going to be played at Miles. Look, this was an Albany State team that was in the SIAC championship game or played in the SIAC championship game on last year. Quinn Gray in his first season as the head football coach there at Albany State. And so it's a look, this is a big game really for both teams. Both teams started out the season 0-2, have since won three straight football games. And so it's a big game when you're talking about the SIAC and that football game. And so we're going to keep our eye on that, talk a little bit more about that game also on today. You know, I want to recognize the HBCU National Players of the Week. And when we look at this process each week, you got to go through all of what we do here is we look at all of the box scores from the HBCU games. And when I say all of them, I mean all of them. Okay. And so made the determination after looking at all of the box scores that Justin Smith Brown, the wide receiver for South Carolina State, is one of our HBCU National Players of the Week. That was a big win last week by South Carolina State over Tennessee Tech. South Carolina State, you know, South Carolina State and Florida A&M are mirroring each other to me right now. I realize South Carolina State hasn't played any games in the MEAC to this point, but you talk about two teams with new coaches, but these coaches have coached at other places, most notably Chinnis Berry, having coached certainly at Benedict right up or down the road from Orangeburg. So you're talking about two teams that are playing well, and two teams, we could see a rematch of that football game in the Celebration Bowl. I mean, it's very, very possible. Now, there's still, we're only halfway through the season, and so there's plenty more games left to play. No doubt Florida A&M has only played one conference game to this point. Meanwhile, as I mentioned, South Carolina State hasn't played any games. But that's a game, a matchup between those two teams that could possibly be a matchup of the two teams that could play in the Celebration Bowl. Look, you look at South Carolina State, wins over Tennessee Tech, wins over the Citadel, and win over A&T, so all non-conference wins against Division I opponents. You look at Florida A&M, win over South Carolina State, win over Norfolk State, and then to open the season, and then a victory over as I mentioned, this past week against Tennessee Tech. So three non-conference wins, both have a couple of losses on the season as well. So, you know, again, Justin Smith Brown, one of our HBCU National Players of the Week, the wide receiver for South Carolina State, had a couple of touchdown receptions. Then Isaiah Knowles, the quarterback for Albany State. I mean, six touchdown passes. He leads Division II in touchdown passes. And I'm going to be interested to see what Isaiah Knowles can do against a Miles team that is hot. But if you want to know more about Justin Smith Brown, the wide receiver from South Carolina State, or Albany State quarterback Isaiah Knowles, you can log on or visit BoxToRow.com for more information. So look, as I mentioned, we'll table that for right now because we've got plenty of HBCU talk today here on the program. Also, we're going to take a listen back as Box to Row is celebrating 20 years or the countdown to 20 years with respect to Box to Row. So we're going to have a listen back to a conversation also today as well. And we'll talk with you momentarily about that as well. But look, we've got some week six of the National Football League. Had a chance to be in Landover, Maryland last week. had a chance to see the Washington Commanders really mop up the Cleveland Browns, like beat the Cleveland Browns to death. And look, I think a quarterback change should be made in Cleveland. Jameis Winston is the backup. He's more than capable. Deshaun Watson is not playing well at all. His body language looks bad. I watched Deshaun Watson, and he doesn't look good at all. Now, that first year coming off the suspension was kind of rusty. What was the really good game he had? It was against then the Washington football team. You look at last year, started off bad, then started to kind of pick it up a little bit, got hurt. And then Joe Flacco comes in. Cleveland plays well during the rest of the regular season. Deshaun Watson looks bad right now. He's got the $230 million guaranteed contract. He's getting all of that money. Doesn't matter if he gets demoted, if he gets cut, whatever the case may be, he's getting all of that money. And I think that if you are the Browns and Stefanski, you've got to make this move. His body language looks bad. The offense is, I think, from a talent perspective, better than what it is showing. The Commanders, I will give the Commanders credit. The defense, I think, is improving each and every week. So I give them credit there. You look what the Commanders were able to do a couple of weeks ago against the Cardinals. Again, not a prolific offense, but you're talking about one of the better quarterbacks in the league in Kyler Murray. But listen, Deshaun Watson doesn't look good. He had all of those troubles with all of the sexual harassment suits. And now, you know, I don't know what has happened to Deshaun Watson. Did I think we were going to see the Deshaun Watson that we saw in Houston? Not at all. But the bottom line is he looks bad. And look, I'm a fan of the Commanders. Like, I've got to give kudos because, look, it's going well. Like, it's really going well right now. 4-1, big-time football game on Sunday. This should be a prime-time game. Like, this should be that 4:25 slotted game or the Sunday night game or the Monday night game as the battle for the beltway between the Commanders and the Ravens. The Ravens are coming around, starting to play some good football. You look at Lamar Jackson, he's looked pretty good throughout the course of the season. So very much looking forward to that football game. So plenty more to come here on Box to Row. Our Box to Row countdown to 20. Listen back. More NFL talk. Week 7 of the HBCU football schedule. And still to come, Florida A&M head football coach James Colsey.
Home sales are down 31% across America, and mortgage rates are on the rise. If your home is not selling, you need to call our experts right now at the Quick Cash Hotline. We have investors ready to pay you cash for your property, regardless of the condition it's in. Most of our closings can happen in about 7 days. You don't have to worry about a buyer getting approved. You don't have to worry about showing your home. One simple call right now. Just pick up the phone and call us. I'll give you the number in a second. We will negotiate with you a price to buy your home. It's that simple. If you're ready to sell your home right now, any home, any condition, and you don't want to put money into it, no problem. We'll buy it from you. Call right now. It's a free call.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Trent Scott, offensive lineman for the Washington Commanders.
Talk about a dream come true as a kid, man. You know, big man always dream of getting that play called and to be wide open like that. Ball feel like it was in the air forever. Celebrating, especially being at prime time.
For the Qs, is it like a mandate that if you get into the end zone, you got to do the celebration, right?
You got to set it up, man. That was the just second nature. Cliff, Coach Cliff told me last time we ran it in practice. He said, hey, you got to have a celebration ready. I said, oh, I can do that in my sleep. But I already knew what I was going
to
do.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Still to come here on Box to Row, Florida A&M head football coach James Colsey. Looking forward to you hearing that conversation, his very first time on Box to Row. And we're going to take a look at week 7 in HBCU football. Well, our countdown to 20, listen back, takes a listen back to a conversation we had about 3 years ago with Stan Verrett, ESPN's Stan Verrett, one of the preeminent hosts of one of the best shows, not just on ESPN, but on television, SportsCenter, and had a chance to talk with him about his career. Of course, he's a Howard University graduate, and you know his catchphrase when it's either a team from the MEAC or the SWAC, respect the SWAC, respect the MEAC. So we're going to respect Stan Verrett, as of course we do, right now as we take a listen back to a conversation we had with him back about 3 years ago.
Good, man. Good to be with you, Donald. Everything's great, man. Looking forward to our conversation. And I got a lot of love for Morgan, old MEAC rival, you know.
Right.
I come from an HBCU family, so that's always been a big part of my experience.
Oh, wow. So your folks, where'd your folks go?
My mom went to Dillard University in New Orleans.
Yep.
And then she was an professor and administrator at Dillard, later vice president of academic affairs at Grambling. My older brother went to Dillard as well, and my younger brother went to Howard, just like I did.
Ah, very good. Listen, back in 2011, I did a show from the Xavier, prior to the Xavier Dillard game. It was on a Saturday. As a matter of fact, it was 2 weeks before Mardi Gras.
That's a big game.
Man,
that's a big game.
It was off the chain. Did the show. It was great. Didn't call the game. It was actually a really good game. And that's a big time rivalry there in New Orleans.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how come
throw the record books out? Throw the record books out when Dillard and Xavier get together, man. It's always a big event. It's a big game and a big event.
Yeah. So why Howard? Why Howard?
You know, it's funny. I knew I wanted to go to an HBCU because, you know, growing up in New Orleans with my mom teaching at Dillard, I pretty much grew up on Dillard's campus. And so my idea of college from at a very young age was black students going to college. Like that's what I understood college to be. And so when I started thinking about my own college experience, that's what I wanted it to be, with the fraternities and the sororities and the band and everything, you know. And so I just knew that that was the right experience for me, because I saw the way my mother was a science teacher. She taught anatomy, physiology, biology, and was later chair of the Division of Natural Sciences at Dillard. And I saw the sense of mission she had about her students. My mother helped to create a generation of black doctors and nurses and dentists in New Orleans and throughout the South, where Dillard's alumni mainly come from. And so I saw the sense of mission she had about her students, and that sense of purpose that came with going to an HBCU. And I knew that's the experience that I wanted. I've since come to learn, talking to students who went to, you know, bigger mainstream, predominantly white institutions, that they had, you know, issues on campus and, you know, were involved in protests and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't want that kind of thing to mar my college experience. I wanted it to be about creating the right future for myself professionally. And I wanted to have fun and not be burdened by any of the foolishness that might happen at a different type of school.
No, very well said. Did you foresee yourself being, in sports or on television, or actually combining the two?
Well, you know, my original goal was to play for the New Orleans Saints in the NFL. I'm born and raised in New Orleans. And, you know, I got to high school, St. Augustine High School in New Orleans. We were coming off back-to-back state championships at the highest level in Louisiana. We have a really proud football tradition. Recent grads include Tyrann Mathieu and Leonard Fournette. I mean, we've always had great teams, great athletes. And I got out there, found out just how great those athletes were, and that I wasn't one of them. And so, you know, my mom, being the educator that she is, said, listen, you know, your test scores and anything to do with anything verbal, your writing, your speaking, those are your real talents, you know, and there's a way you can use those talents and still be around sports, because she knew I love sports. And she knew that she could get me to read. First of all, I had a subscription to Sports Illustrated since I was 5 years old, you know, and it was mine. And the rules were I could get my subscription to Sports Illustrated, read about all my favorite athletes. But if there were words that I didn't understand, I had to go look them up, you know. And so it was just her trick to get me to read. And so I became a lifelong reader. And that, in turn, enhanced my verbal skills, just being exposed to words and language and writing. That enhanced my verbal skills, and I got good at it myself. And so I said, you know, maybe she's got a point. So I became the sports editor of our student newspaper. I knew everything about the football team. I knew all the plays, you know. I knew all the players. I knew who was good, who wasn't, you know. And so I had a real unique perspective in covering them. And then the basketball team as well, we won the state championship while I was there in basketball as well. And so that kicked off my journalism career, and I never looked back.
No question about it. Of course, that the voice of Stan Verrett. See him nightly on ESPN as he joins us here on Boxer. As a matter of fact, specifically ESPN Los Angeles, I didn't realize that. Well, I realized that you started it, right? And that was 2009. I didn't realize it had been 12 years, like 12 years since you've been doing this.
Fantastic. I mean, it's still a lot of fun every single night. We've got a great crew out here. The big difference between here and Bristol is that I know everybody's name here. You know, Bristol's such a large campus. There's 5,000 people there, or maybe even more than that now. But we have a very small crew here. And so it feels to me like a local station with unlimited resources, you know, because you know everybody. And it's really, I mean, I know every company or organization says, oh, it's like a fam. It really is here, because there's not that many people. And so you can really get to know your coworkers. Like when I was in Bristol, you know, there's thousands of people there, but I'm on screen every night. So people know my name. So I'm walking down the hallway, hey, Stan, how's it going? And there's no way possible I can reply in kind to everybody and know their name, you know? And it's sort of uncomfortable, because I pride myself being friendly, being nice to people, you know, but it just bothers me when, you know, they know my name, but there's no way for me to memorize everybody else's name. So I don't have that issue here.
Yeah. So for you, congratulations, the new contract. It's a big deal.
Thank you.
You know, talk about it. That's great. That's phenomenal.
Well, you know, I just want to continue the work that we've done. Like I said, it's still a fun job every single night. I mean, when everybody's watching the NBA playoffs, you know, as they are right now, I get to watch it and then go on TV and talk about it. It's a tremendous responsibility, first of all, for me as a journalist to cover the story effectively. It's a lot of fun, though, because it's highlights and it's exciting, you know, because it's sports and the great athletes that we cover. It's like the ultimate reality television, where we don't know what's going to happen when we show up to work every night, but we know something's going to happen that's going to be noteworthy, and we get to tell the story of it. And as a journalist, I mean, that's the dream right there, being able to tell the story of exciting events and bring your own talents to doing that. And it's a challenge and a thrill every single night. And so I don't know what I would be doing if I wasn't doing this. This is what I've always wanted to do. It's what I've always enjoyed doing. So why stop now?
No question. You know, it's interesting, when I talked with Anthony Anderson some years ago, you know, he mentioned just in not necessarily the same class at Howard, but some of his classes had at the same time Laz Alonso, P. Diddy, yeah, Shy, Ananda Lewis, Carl Anthony Payne, Wendy Raquel Robinson, Taraji P. It's crazy. And like you mentioned some, but you graduated with Steve Weich, a friend of this program. What do you remember most about those, your days at Howard?
What, you know what? And she's going to kill me if she sees this, because I left her off the list. But Michelle Miller from CBS News, who's a co-anchor CBS Morning News on weekends, we were student co-anchors together on the first student-produced newscast that Howard did in 1989. And, you know, Michelle's been a dear friend for years. I don't know how I left her off my list. You know, Frederica was a couple of years ahead of me, but I saw Frederica Whitfield, and I'm like, okay, she's going to be on network news one day. I saw Michelle in the classroom with me. I'm like, she's going to be on network news one day. There were other people who were in our classes who chose to go different routes, because the skills that we got learning to write and to speak, they're transferable and relevant across a number of different industries. So some people went to business school, some people went to law school, and now they're executives and attorneys, and they're still using the skills that they learned at the School of Communications at Howard, but they're just not practicing journalists. So it was unbelievable. And then there's so many other people who were there at the same time with me. Roz Baraka, the mayor of Newark, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Kasim Reed, who was past mayor of Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, there's so many people who've distinguished themselves. Anthony was there when I was there. I mean, there were so many people who distinguished themselves in so many different ways. And I have to, at Howard, it's only going to increase, because the school is doing such a good job of capitalizing on its appeal and marketing that appeal to young people. You know, Howard has always had a reputation for being cool, for being hip, because of people like Diddy and Debbie Allen and Felicia Rashad. I mean, it's like, we've always had that star power. And I think the university understands that appeal, and they're using that to market the university effectively. And then Kamala Harris comes along. And Kamala Harris is elected Vice President of the United States. She's a Howard graduate, pledged Alpha Kappa Alpha in 1986. Samuel Harris pledged Alpha Phi Alpha. We're all enormously proud of her. But it's elevated the reputation of Howard. It's elevated the appeal of Howard and for HBCUs in general, because it sends the message in a resoundingly clear way that you can go anywhere that you want to go in this world if you have the drive, the ambition, and the talent, and you go to an HBCU.
Box to Rose countdown to 20, and our listen back with ESPN's Stan Verrett. Of course, you can listen to plenty more, watch plenty more of these conversations on our YouTube channel. Up next here on Box to Row, a conversation with Florida A&M head football coach James Colsey. This is your weekly edition of the HBCU Blitz, powered by Box to Row. I'm Donald Ware. First, I'm going to take you to St. Charles, Missouri, for the Big South OVC matchup between Lindenwood and Tennessee State. Let's pick things up in the third quarter with Tennessee State trailing 20-7 and possession.
Ellis has gone the distance. Inside fake handoff to Evans. Looking. Still looking. Send going it. Deep. He's got Evans on the near side. Hits him at the 40. It's a foot race to the 30, to the 20, 10. Touchdown, TSU. 74 yards.
And the Tigers pulled to within 20-14. That was with about 8 minutes remaining in the third quarter. Also late in the third quarter, TSU would get a 40-yard field goal from James Lowry to pull to within 20-17. Now, we're going to pick things up midway through the fourth quarter. TSU trailing 20-17 and knocking on the doorstep.
And nope. He's going to hand it off right to Tevin Carter. Touchdown, TSU.
That's my guy, Greg Pogue, on the TSU Sports Network. From 1 yard out, gave the Tigers the 24-20 lead, and they would go on to defeat Lindenwood 24-20. The Tigers have won two straight and are 2-1 in the Big South OVC. Now to Charlotte for a critical CIAA matchup between Virginia State and Johnson C. Smith. Let's move to the third quarter with about 9 minutes remaining. Virginia State trailing 14-7 and possession.
Williams back to throw, fires it over the middle, caught in the end zone, touchdown Virginia State.
From 13 yards out, and the Trojans tied the game at 14 apiece. On the next possession, Johnson C. Smith looking to regain the lead.
Second and goal from just outside the one. Shotgun formation, handoff. George flies into the end zone. Touchdown, Smith.
And the Golden Bulls did regain the lead At 21-14, Virginia State would get a Joshua Campbell 28-yard field goal with 11:05 remaining in the fourth to pull to within 21-17. Now I'm going to take you to the waning moments of the fourth quarter. The Golden Bulls trying to hold that 21-17 lead. Virginia State driving.
Williams back to throw. Williams fires it down the middle. It's intercepted at the 3-yard line. Picked off by Jack Smith. He slides down at the 15, and that'll do it.
My man, John Emmett. On WVST, the Golden Bulls would go on to defeat Virginia State 21-17. And with Clark Atlanta's loss, the Golden Bulls, the only undefeated team in HBCU football, ranked number 5 in the HBCU media poll. Now to Montgomery, Alabama. For the SWAC matchup between Alabama State and Florida A&M, we're going to pick things up in the fourth quarter late. Alabama State trailing 21-13, looking to try to tie and get the two-point conversion.
Oh, fumble by their quarterback, scooped up by Rattler, and he's going to score. Touchdown, FAMU! Touchdown, Rattlers!
Melvin Beal on the FAMU Sports Network. Nayron Jenkins' 20-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown sealed the deal as the Rattlers defeated Alabama State 28-13. The Rattlers ranked number 1 in the HBCU media poll. Let's check on some of our NFL HBCUers.
First and 10 Saints at the Chief 39. Carr's under pressure. Throws it up for grabs on the near side. It's intercepted. Intercepted by Brian Cook.
The former Howard defensive back with his second career interception. The Chiefs defeated the Saints on Monday Night Football 26-13. That audio courtesy of the Chiefs radio network, Mitch Holthus on the call. And last Thursday night in Atlanta,
Cousins, and they're going to gun it, and it's caught to Darryl Hodge. 35-30.
Take it, baby.
20, 15, 10, 5, bang. Drive home safely. Oh, my goodness.
Welcome to the game, Kadarryl. Are you serious?
A walk-off for Kadarryl Hodge and the Falcons.
The former Prairie View A&M star got it done. The Falcons defeated the Buccaneers in overtime, 36-30. That was Wes Durham and Dave Archer on the Falcons radio network. Hodge is scheduled to join me this week on Box to Row. Box to Row, the radio show, airs weekly on radio stations across the country as well as on SiriusXM. To listen to the show or for more information, visit BoxToRow.com. Had a chance on Thursday to catch up with Florida A&M head football coach James Colsey. Here's the conversation.
Hey, not a lot, man. Thanks for having me. It's great to be in front of folks because normally when you're talking to someone, that means you're doing some good things. So, but it's great to be on this morning.
Absolutely. Let me start here. Can you speak to it's sort of, you know, when you talk about SWAC football, sometimes you may have two byes during the course of a season. But for you, it's now your third one or your third time you're not playing. I wouldn't, you know, not necessarily Bob, but the third time you're not playing. Really, you've had a situation where I guess you played the first two games, then you played, not played, that type of thing. How challenging is that? You don't have a game again until October 19th against Jackson State.
Well, it hasn't been that challenging for us because it's allowed us to just work on certain things that, you know, after maybe a game or two, you feel you need to address, you know. After having our first bye week, our first scheduled bye week, right, it allowed us to, you know, it gave us the opportunity to get some of our newer players or some of our newer additions to the football team, just some added film, some added field time, some added, added time with the coaches. Also, you know, we played two really, really tough MEAC schools, you know, and that allowed us to get healthy. You know, two teams that kind of banged us up a little bit, and so that gave us the opportunity to get healthy. So, you know, regardless of the fact you can always, you know, I felt as a staff, you know, we spoke about taking advantage of these times. You know, we don't major in the minors. We do what's asked, and so it gave us extra time. It gave us extra time to get healthy. And this gave us some extra time to get closer to the football team.
Yeah, your thoughts on the way that the team has played. Again, you talk about, I mean, look, you had to, you know, the Norfolk State game was the good game. South Carolina State game, you came from behind to win, you know, sort of that game. And then, of course, speaking about your last game in the victory over Alabama State, just speak to how you think in two game, two FBS games, what a Power Five game sandwich in between. Speak to how your team has played so far this season.
Well, I thought we done a heck of a job of persevering. You know, I had an opportunity to joke with a little bit with the media, you know, last week when I talked about I'm really anxious to see how we would play if we were ahead. And then we go into Alabama State and, you know, we go down on our second drive and it's 7-0. But, you know, we've learned a lot about our team. Our team learned a lot about our coaches, right? We, you know, having the ability to adjust, having the ability to go into a halftime setting and speak about what we want to do, you know, moving forward for the rest of the football game. So our players, you know, built trust with our players and vice versa with our coaches, being able to execute whatever plan we may have, right? So, you know, we played a Norfolk State team that we had a brand new offensive coordinator. So we were kind of guessing on maybe what they would call, right? And then, you know, made a few adjustments at halftime. Then we played South Carolina State team, you know, that again, new staff, not necessarily going into maybe truly understanding what they may do and what they may call, right? So, you know, we had the Benedict film, but, you know, ultimately they came out and did some different things, right? So, you know, again, you know, we got behind, being able to overcome adversity, being able to persevere, being able just to go in there and, hey, say, hey, this is how we're going to make our changes. You know, all of the things that we preached during the spring, all the things that we preached during the summer came to fruition because, you know, we were able to execute in times that we needed to make sure that we executed. So, you know, excited about it. Obviously, you play University of Miami. We're all watching on how good they are, right? I personally feel, you know, we could have finished better against Troy and obviously getting a chance to go into Alabama State, rough place, going in there for their homecoming, playing in front of almost 35,000 fans. You know, we got a true opportunity to see what this team is like. And then now, obviously, next week, getting a chance to go to Jackson State, another opportunity to show what this team is made of.
James Colsey, again, in his first season, and he is the head football coach at Florida A&M. He joins us here on Box to Row. What are you? This is not your first time that you've been a head coach, right? But what are you learning about yourself 5 games into the season as the head football coach at Florida A&M?
Well, you know, my first, you know, I was, as you mentioned, I was a head coach in Canada at the, you know, at St. Mary's University, Division I school in Canada. I wore a lot of hats. You know, I was a defensive coordinator. I was a defensive back coach. I had to worry about the corners. I had to worry about housing. I had to worry about all of those things. And I think I took a stranglehold on a lot of different things. You know, now as the head coach here at Florida A&M, obviously our staff being a lot bigger, you know, just being able to allow my coordinators to coach, giving things that I want, and our coordinators doing a great job making sure that they get those things that I want, but just allowing my coach to coach, allowing my coordinators to be coordinators, you know, and everybody in our support staff, just allowing them the opportunity to excel in exactly what I hired them for.
Can you speak to your coaching staff? And one of the things, I had a chance to come down in April and present the national championship trophy, the HBCU national championship trophy, to you and the Rattlers. But one of the gentlemen I'd never met in person that I got a chance to talk to who's on your staff is Doc Gamble. Now, he's been on this program many times when he was the head coach, you know, at Arkansas Pine Bluff. Speak to him. You've got a couple of number of head former head coaches, James Spady, et cetera, that are on your staff also.
Well, you know, you get a chance to, when we were going through the transition and things of that nature, obviously winning a national championship with this staff, obviously with Coach Simmons at the helm, you know, and I think the biggest thing for me was making sure our guys wasn't going to have to go through multiple changes in philosophies, right? So, you know, we kept a lot of the things that we did on offense. We kept a lot of the things that we did defensively. You know, obviously Doc Gamble being a head, you know, being a head football coach at other, you know, at another SWAC university, just gave me the opportunity to lean on certain guys on staff. Obviously, Coach Spady, another guy who's been a head coach, you know, at a SWAC university. So, you know, given using that experience, you know, I maybe at the other institution, I thought I might have known everything. We're here. I don't think I have to know everything. I have an opportunity to lean on Doc Gamble, opportunity to lean on Joe Henry, opportunity to lean on Milton Patterson. Obviously, all three, you know, those three guys being coordinators of my staff, bouncing things off of certain people on my staff that I feel may have the experience or may have the correct answers to my questions, but I'm allowing my staff to be exactly who I hired them to be. So get a chance to learn from them as well, right? Learning from their different experiences that they may have had at previous institutions.
Your quarterback, Daniel Richardson, I mean, he's playing as well as any other player in a quarterback in the SWAC. You look at the numbers, they're really, really solid. Speak to how he's played so far this season.
Well, I think, you know, the biggest thing for him is he's his toughest critic as well. You got a guy who's spent at two different universities. He's thrown for 7,000 yards. He's been in some hostile environments. You know, he's a guy that went through a really, really tough quarterback competition because it wasn't a position that we gave him, but he had to go through the process, right? So, you know, he's a guy that, you know, you feel really, really comfortable taking on the road, right, in hostile environments, a guy that you feel is going to execute the plan to the best of his ability. And that's a plus for us, right? I mean, you know, then you go down the line, you talk about our veteran offensive line, you look at our veteran core of receivers. So, you know, he's a guy that steps to the huddle. He receives immediate respect from the football team, and primarily because, not just because of what he's done at previous institutions, but how he's carried himself on and off campus and throughout the locker room.
And you're a defensive guy. I mean, you play, and I want to talk more about that. You played college football at Florida State under the legendary Bobby Bowden. Your thoughts on the way the defense has played as a whole?
Well, we've had to make adjustments, right? I mean, you look at our team over the last couple of years, right? We've always had that dominant defensive end, or heck, even two dominant defensive ends right now. So we've kind of had to make some adjustments on how we play. You know, we're a little bit more gap sound, we feel. And then obviously, you know, we lost. You know, the list goes on and on of all the all-conference players that we lost, right? You know, you mentioned General Hunt, Anthony Dunn, Isaiah Land, obviously, a couple years ago. Kamari Stevens a couple years ago. Isaiah Major, you know, Johnny Chaney, right? Dank Smith. I mean, guys that, you know, that hung their hat on what we did defensively. And then we had to incorporate some of the newer guys that have been to the fold. So each week we've improved at one specific area. You know, this past week it was third down, making sure we got off the field. We were able to create a couple of turnovers. But, you know, I just think going from game one to game five, right, you know, we've been able to adjust. Our guys are understanding what we're asking them to do, you know, schematically wise and philosophical. So, I mean, you know, again, new names, right? But, you know, each week we've improved and, you know, we're gonna need to be at our best next week.
A couple of more thoughts with James Colsey, the head football coach at Florida A&M, and we appreciate the time. To the point, you mentioned you're sort of out recruiting now. I mean, Florida's been hit, and we pray for all of those, you know, that are in the path of the hurricane. But sort of, you know, these three bye weeks, I would say, or 3 weeks off during the course of the season allows you to do some other things, including recruiting.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, this would have been a week that we would have been out on the road regardless. And as you mentioned, definitely want to make sure we give prayers and wishes for anybody who's been affected, not just by this hurricane, but the one that we had, 7 to 10 days ago. But, you know, I think for us, it's given us as a team, you know, the week before, you know, our first bye week, we really, really wanted to concentrate on getting healthy. You know, we were banged up, right? So then we go through Alabama A&M. Not necessarily a week of a bye week that we were expecting, but again, that bye week was, we knew we weren't going to practice. Obviously, you know, our university made the proper announcement to close our university, and so again, another opportunity just for us to just kind of harp on some of the details that we needed to harp on, whether it was offensively, defensively, and special teams. Now, this past week, again, two hard practices dedicated to everything in regards to Jackson State, but concentrating on our penalties, making sure we're making the right decisions, being disciplined. Offensively, really, really concentrating on making sure we're valuing the football like we need to, right? So, you know, just every week that we've had that opportunity to harp on certain things, I thought we've done a great job of being able to do that, not just from my standpoint, but from my entire football staff.
And then again, plan for going back to your college days as an all-conference player, as a matter of fact, at Florida State, playing for the legendary Bobby Bowden, winning a national championship. What do you remember most about those days, in particular, Coach Bowden?
Well, I would say this, you know, during those times, if you were a starter at Florida State, you kind of made all-conference. I'm not going to say it about my play. You know what I mean? We were a very, very good football team, and you know, the ACC felt if you were good enough to start at Florida State, more than likely you were good enough to be out conference. But, you know, I think at Coach Bowden, man, Coach Bowden instilled the discipline, you know, the want to, that come to work every day attitude that I continue to stress to my players. You know, me as a player, my backup was Samari Rowe, you know, a guy that spent double-digit years in the NFL. So I knew every single day that if I came in and didn't work hard, then, you know, Samari Roll was going to be right behind me waiting to make plays, right? And then backing up Samari Roll was a guy by the name of Tay Cody, who was also a draft pick for the San Diego Chargers. So, you know, you come in and you have the opportunity to make sure every day you come in and do the things that are necessary to be successful at, whether it's Florida State, whether it's Florida A&M, whether it's any university that you attend, right? So every day coming into work, making sure you're doing what's needed to be successful. But, you know, Coach Bowden just, you know, having an opportunity to play for him and then coming back, having an opportunity to be a grad assistant for him. Learned a lot from one of the best coaches in the history of college football. But he made sure that whether it was as a player, as a coach, to make sure I came in every single day wanting and making sure I did everything I needed to do to be successful.
Getting to know Florida A&M head football coach James Colsey. We'll be back.
If you have diabetes, listen up. If you have insurance, you can qualify for a continuous glucose monitor. With a CGM, you can continuously track your levels and trends and spend more time in range, significantly lowering your A1C. More importantly, a CGM eliminates the one thing most people with diabetes hate, painful finger sticks. Order your new continuous glucose monitor today. If you use insulin and if you've seen your diabetes care provider within the last 6 months, you may qualify for your own CGM right now. We'll do all the insurance paperwork and deliver your new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost to you. Medicare and most insurances will cover your CGM, so don't wait. Have your insurance handy and call the Aptiva Medical CGM Health Hotline right now.
800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. That's 800-946-6813.
BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs.
From the game of the week feature to interviews
to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered.
Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row?
BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches bowls.
From the Press Box to Press Row
and BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
Thoughts and prayers go out to all of those affected by Hurricane Milton, particularly those obviously in Florida. As a matter of fact, in that kind of Tampa, St. Pete area, one of our affiliates is there in Tampa, WURK. So prayers out to all of those affected by Hurricane Milton. So Robert Saleh, now former head coach of the Jets, gone. I was surprised. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I understand the loss of the Jets on Sunday in London, back-to-back losses, only 2-3 on the season. And my initial thought, because when this was talked about even before the loss on Sunday, I was like, no, the Jets are not going to let Robert Saleh go. It's not that bad. I mean, you know, again, Aaron Rodgers is kind of coming back. The defense is playing reasonably well. The you look at the AFC East, it is not great right now. So it's a little bit early and I think a little bit premature to even be having that conversation only 5 games in. Now the head coach is now Jeff Ulbrich. He takes over, and one of the first things that he did, which it was rumored or talked about that Saleh was going to do, was strip the play calling duties of Nathaniel Hackett, who of course goes back many years with Aaron Rodgers. And look, the offense just hasn't looked good. I mean, that's the bottom line. But Saleh's a defensive-minded coach. And again, when I first heard about this, like I thought it was premature. You know, I would defer. I don't have a dog in the fight, but I mean, just in terms of topics of discussion, the more I really thought about it, and look, this is the NFL, it's professional sports. And sometimes you need a jolt, and maybe the team, the organization and the players in particular, perhaps needed a reset, needed a jolt. Sometimes you need a new voice. I've raised four children, right? And you can talk to children sometimes until you're blue in the face about certain things. But sometimes if someone else says it, then it resonates. And that could be the case here. They needed maybe, perhaps the Jets needed a bit of a different voice. I would say more specifically from an offensive standpoint, because the defense hadn't played badly. So this is where the Jets are now. I'm interested to see what the Jets look like moving forward. More specifically, I'm interested to see what the offense is going to look like moving forward. And you've got a big Monday night game in the division against the Bills in New Jersey. That's the thing, in New Jersey. Now, if the Jets come out, I would say this, if the Jets come out, lay an egg, lose that football game, then you're going to have a lot more people asking or questioning why Saleh was fired at this juncture. Now, you know, sort of listening and reading, it seems to be, you know, more people. I hadn't really engaged Jets fans, and I'd love to engage Jets fans right now. I mean, were you for the firing of Robert Saleh? You can hit me up via X at Box to Row, BoxToRow. Would really like to engage Jets fans in this conversation. Because, look, nobody knows the pain like Jets fans. Last time the Jets were really, really, I mean, the Jets are going to be relevant because the Jets are in New York. So the Jets are always going to be relevant. So the last time, however, the Jets mattered or were good to people outside of New York, you know, you talk about those days when the Jets went to back-to-back AFC championship games, like in the early part of the 2010s. And it's been a long time for the Jets. I think the last Super Bowl was the first Super Bowl for the Jets that Joe Namath predicted that the Jets would win, and the Jets did beat a very powerful Baltimore Colts team led by Johnny Unitas, and really was part of, I don't say part of, but that whole AFL-NFL merger in 1970. But I mean, the Jets fans have suffered, and that's why I want to engage Jets fans now. Again, hit me up via Twitter at Box to Row. But again, if the Jets lay an egg, or let's say the offense does well, or, you know, I don't know if it's a good football game, one in which the Jets lose by a little bit, maybe it's not questioned in terms of the firing of Saleh as much. I guess it just depends on how the game goes. I would say, though, however, if it's a bad game, and let's say it's still a bad offensive game and the defense continues to play well, do you hear, is there more about the firing of Saleh? Now, I hope Saleh gets another opportunity. He's a great defensive-minded coach. Look at the defenses in San Francisco when he was the head coach there, and we'll see what happens. That's a tough break. Again, initially, my initial thought was that's not something you do, but then again, maybe a new voice was needed, and I'm going to be interested to see how the Jets perform against the Bills, and it's a home game for the Jets with, in essence, at this juncture in the season, first place on the line in the AFC East. You know, I was taking a look at week 7 of the HBCU scoreboard, and of course you can find the scoreboard at BoxToRow.com. Not a lot of intriguing games. Per se, there are some good games, but not a whole lot of games as you might expect at this juncture in the season. A couple of reasons for that. One, the MEAC has yet to begin MEAC play. The only MEAC game so far was the game in Indianapolis with a couple of weeks ago with the Eagles, North Carolina Central, and Norfolk State. That was the game, the only MEAC game to this point. The other thing is when you look at the SWAC, like Florida A&M is playing as well as anybody right now. Matter of fact, I think Florida A&M is probably, look, Alcorn State has kind of come around, is undefeated in conference play. But to me, Florida A&M, the defending champs, are playing the best football right now as far as SWAC teams are concerned. It may not seem that way because the schedule is jaded, but to me, Florida A&M is playing the best. But I'm not, look, Alcorn State is right there, right? 3-3, 2-0, got off to the slow start as Alcorn State has the last several years, but under Cedric Thomas, you know, especially defensively, I think Alcorn State's going to be good, and Alcorn State is on the road against Grambling. Grambling's got an opportunity to rebound. Look, big win a couple of weeks ago against Jackson State, right? So we know the Tigers are capable, right? So this is an intriguing game, but again, it's not, you know, look, if Alcorn wins, or if Alcorn wins, then it's 3-0 in conference play. That's a big deal, right? But it's still many more games left to be played. And if Grambling wins, then Grambling is back. Not that Grambling is out of it. The Tigers have only played one conference game to this point. It's not like Grambling's out of it. That said, Grambling right back in it, but a loss for Grambling means Grambling is far back. Now you're down two games, and Alcorn State has the head-to-head advantage. So that is probably the big game in terms of in the SWAC. I think if you're, you know, Alabama State, you want to stick around. You've got to beat Mississippi Valley State, who's scoring some points. But the Delta Devils, unfortunately, have not won a game to this point. I look at, and then, like I said, a couple of reasons, maybe not as big a games as when we're through the midway point in week 7, yet the MEAC hasn't played. Like I mentioned, the SWAC, you know, is teams have gotten off to the slow start. That's not necessarily the case in the CIAA. There's a couple of like big games, right? Like Shaw and Winston-Salem State. That's a really, really big football game. The winner continues to control its destiny as far as the CIAA are playing in the CIAA championship game. Again, no divisions. The loser, boy, that's a big loss, right? Fayetteville State and Livingstone. Who would have thought Livingstone, is playing some pretty good football right now, okay? And Fayetteville State wants to continue to be at the top of the CIAA. So that's a pretty big game as well. I mean, Virginia State and Bowie State, not necessarily a big game. I think Bowie State hasn't won in conference, but even if Bowie State wins, it means that the Bulldogs' chances aren't over with, but the Bulldogs would only be 1-2. Meanwhile, Virginia State, this is, to me, a must win. You're 1-1, and if Virginia State loses that game at home, I might add, that would be an absolutely huge loss. Then I look at the SIAC, the biggest game, Albany State and Miles. I think Albany State behind Isaiah Knowles, the quarterback, playing some really, really good football. Miles is starting to come around. Both teams got off to the 0-2 start, have both won its last three ball games. And this is going to be a really, really big game. Again, no divisions in the SIAC. Perhaps this is a preview of the SIAC championship game. When I look at it right now and I look at the SIAC, clearly to me, the best two teams right now are Miles and Albany State. So it should be a really, really good matchup. I mean, look, Tuskegee is going to look to knock off Lane to stay in contention, because at the end of the day, Tuskegee's 2-1. The loss by either Albany State or Miles coupled with a Tuskegee win means that Tuskegee and that team that lost are now tied in the SIAC. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. We appreciate James Colsey's time here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, you can log on to our website, boxtorow.com. Also, don't forget about Box to Row's countdown to 20, which can be viewed on the Box to Row YouTube page. And always remember to support those that support Yo Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.